Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We need to secure the population. It's one of General McChrystal's principal objectives. Then the upper levels of the Taliban, look, they have to renounce al-Qaeda, renounce violence. They have to be willing to abide by the constitution of Afghanistan and live peacefully. We have no firm information whether any of those leaders would be at all interested in following that kind of a path. In fact, I'm highly skeptical that any of them would.
Skeptical enough to fight. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton there on ABC This Week yesterday. And did you read that long blow-by-blow article that led the Sunday New York Times about how President Obama came to his decision to approve an Afghanistan war escalation? Hillary Clinton was portrayed as very much a hawk in those internal debates, along with Defense Secretary Robert Gates. And before we bring on Congressman Gerald Nadler in about 2 minutes to talk about this, I want to read you a few key paragraphs from the Times article, so well done by Peter Baker, because the story is so compelling and revealing. And so part of what he writes is, with Mr. Biden leading the skeptics, Mrs. Clinton, Mr. Gates, and Admiral Mullen increasingly aligned behind a more robust force, Mrs. Clinton wanted to make sure she was a formidable player in the process. Quote, she was determined that her briefing books would be just as thick and just as meticulous as those of the Pentagon, said one senior advisor. She asked hard questions about Afghan troop training, unafraid of wading into Pentagon territory. And then it continues, Mr. Obama called a smaller group of advisors together on October 26th, this is after many big meetings, to finally press Mrs. Clinton and Mr. Gates. Mrs. Clinton made it clear that she was comfortable with General McChrystal's request for 40,000 troops or something close to it. Mr. Gates also favored a big force. And it says Mr. Obama was leery. He had received a memo the day before from the Office of Management and Budget projecting that General McChrystal's full 40,000 troop request on top of the existing deployment and reconstruction efforts would cost $1 trillion from 2010 to 2020, an advisor said. The president seemed in sticker shock, watching his domestic agenda vanishing in front of him. This is a 10-year, trillion-dollar effort and does not match up with our interests, said the president, according to this article. Still, for the first time, he made it clear that he was ready to send more troops if a strategy could be found to ensure that it was not an endless war. He indicated that the Taliban had to be beaten back. What do we need to break their momentum? He asked. And then it continues a little while later, saying Mr. Gates began shaping a plan that would bridge the differences. He developed a 30,000-troop option that would give General McChrystal the bulk of his request, reasoning that NATO could make up most of the difference. The plan, called Option 2A, was presented to the president on November 11th. Mr. Obama complained that the bell curve would take 18 months to get all the troops in place. He turned to General Petraeus and asked him how long it took to get the so-called surge troops he commanded in Iraq in 2007. That was 6 months. So Mr. Obama said, what I'm looking for is a surge. This has to be a surge. And the Times says that represented a contrast from when Mr. Obama, as a presidential candidate, staunchly opposed President Bush's buildup in Iraq. But unlike Mr. Bush, Mr. Obama wanted from the start to speed up a withdrawal as well. The military was told to come up with a plan to send troops quickly and then begin bringing them home quickly. That from yesterday's New York Times lead story. And so with that as backdrop, we welcome Democratic Congressman Gerald Nadler of Brooklyn and Manhattan, whose district includes the World Trade Center site, to talk about Afghanistan and more. Congressman Nadler, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning.
And can I start on this behind-the-scenes story?
Mm-hmm.
And on Secretary of State Clinton first, I mean, for all the guff that she has taken from the right over the years, she turns out to be a big hawk when push comes to shove on Afghanistan. Are you surprised by that?
Well, yes, I am surprised, and I'm very disappointed. I don't know to what extent all this behind-the-scenes stuff is true. What I do know is that we are about to make a colossal mistake getting into an endless war for no good purpose.
And I guess it shows the differences that we thought we saw between Clinton and Obama in the primaries last year were kind of real. Any thoughts about that?
What kind of real? I don't know that. The president and the secretary of state are going along with the same thing.
They're going along with the same thing now, but she was portrayed as the one who was trying to lead him to it, and he was portrayed as the one who was more leery. And I think that's kind of the impression, not necessarily with respect to Afghanistan, but with respect to using the military in general, that
well,
I think
you know,
we saw on the campaign trail.
The president has to make these decisions ultimately, and he bears a responsibility.
Indeed.
And I'm not, frankly, I don't put a lot of credit or stuff in preliminary discussions. It's what he decides in the end. And he's come down on the wrong side.
Why? Well, and how do you understand it? I mean, this Timeline article, assuming it's accurate, made him sound leery, their word, of an endless war, and so he got this at least hypothetical timeline for getting in and getting out that the right has been howling at about, but that doesn't mollify you very much, I gather.
Well, first of all, it's nonsense. I mean, this morning's New York Times makes very clear that it says the Obama administration sent a forceful public message Sunday that American military forces could remain in Afghanistan for a long time. And it said that, yeah, well, we may, if conditions on the ground permit, start withdrawing. But what does start withdrawing mean? It means you could withdraw over a 20-year period. It doesn't mean anything, really. I mean, we are getting into an open-ended commitment what is probably an unwinnable war with the amount of forces we're willing to commit to it for no good purpose at all. It's going to cost American lives. It's going to cost probably $1 trillion over 10 years. And in the end, we're going to have nothing to show for it other than more enemies.
President Obama must think that this is important because, again, if we take this behind-the-scenes article as accurate, he started out leery. He saw the price tag of $1 trillion potentially on the path that we were on between 2010 and 2020, saw his domestic agenda, which I guess would mean health care and jobs and other things, going up in smoke, and yet he came down for this 30,000-troop option.
It sounds exactly like what we now know, we didn't then, but what we now know are the internal deliberations of Lyndon Johnson in 1965. He's having the same hesitations, the same worry about that it will destroy his domestic agenda, as indeed the Vietnam War destroyed Lyndon Johnson's and the Democratic Party's domestic agenda for reform. The same reluctance and the same ultimate wrong conclusion, and I fear the same disastrous results.
Did he at least scale it down enough to make it affordable for health care and jobs and other priorities to go forward, in your view?
Well, I don't know what he's going to end up doing. I mean, the fact is that if you follow the standard counterinsurgency doctrine and the standard U.S. Army manuals on the subject, to wage a counterinsurgency war, which is what they're talking about doing in a country the size of Afghanistan, you'd need about 600,000 troops there for quite a while. Now, there is no possibility we're going to put 600,000 troops in there, which means we can't wage a successful counterinsurgency war, which means it's not going to succeed. It is going to cost a lot of money. How much depends on subsequent decisions.
Congressman Gerald Nadler, my guest on WNYC from Lower Manhattan and parts of Brooklyn, and we can take your phone calls for him on this at 212-433-WNYC, and for that matter on other things facing Congress right now, and we'll get a little bit into health care and jobs and one or two other things. So you can call for Congressman Nadler now at 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. And on the financial implications, oh, listeners, of course, you can also post to our website, as some of you have begun to do, at WNYC.org. Our webpage is always open, 212-433-9692 on the phones, or WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.
Brian, can I?
On the web. Congressman, go ahead.
Let me just add what I think is a fundamental problem with this. And the fundamental problem is that there's no good purpose for this. We have every right to disrupt and to destroy attempts by Al-Qaeda to launch attacks against the United States. Originally, we went into Afghanistan because we said there were Al-Qaeda base camps plotting mayhem against the United States, and we had to take them out. The CIA now tells us there are fewer than 100 Al-Qaeda people in Afghanistan. Now we've expanded the mission to overthrow the regime, to remake the country, to fight, to join in their 35-year civil war and make sure the right side wins. That's a no-win proposition. It's not going to happen. And there's frankly no purpose. I mean, it would be nice if you could do it without any lives and any money, but it is not in our national interest to control Afghanistan or see who's running it. Our national interest is to make sure that Al-Qaeda can't launch attacks against us.
Well,
they haven't got the troops there now.
Let me play a clip of Defense Secretary Robert Gates on ABC This Week yesterday saying exactly why he thinks it's so vitally in our national interest.
It is because in that border area, the Afghan-Pakistani border, that is the epicenter of extremist jihad. And Al-Qaeda has close relationships with the Taliban in Afghanistan, and they have very close relationships with the Taliban in Pakistan. The Taliban in Pakistan have been attacking Pakistani civilians, Pakistani government officials, military officials, trying to destabilize the government of Pakistan. Any success by the Taliban in either Afghanistan or Pakistan benefits Al-Qaeda. And any safe haven on either side of the border creates opportunities for them to recruit, get new funds, and do operational planning.
To recruit, get new funds, and do operational planning, presumably on targets in the United States and elsewhere. Your response to Secretary Gates?
My response is he's made several different statements there. Number one, by that logic, we should be invading and occupying Pakistan and Eritrea and Yemen and Somalia, all of which have al-Qaeda camps in them. We're not proposing to do that. There's no reason why Afghanistan is more important in that respect than Eritrea or Somalia or Yemen. Pakistan is important beyond the others because they have nuclear weapons. We have to make sure those nuclear weapons don't fall into the wrong hands. Frankly, if they're setting up camps, we have the right, and frankly, I think we ought to exercise that right, to bomb them or send in special forces or whatever, but not to attempt to take over and pacify the entire country, which is not a doable proposition, and is a waste of resources and lives. You know, you have to be careful of mission creep. Our mission is to make sure that Al-Qaeda can't use base camps to attack us. And by the way, Al-Qaeda doesn't need a base camp in Afghanistan. 9/11 was plotted in Hamburg, and the training was done in the United States. They can do this all over the world. We have to have an intelligence war and a law enforcement war and a military war against Al-Qaeda, wherever they are. But it doesn't mean you have to occupy an entire country, which is absurd.
And on the cost, an extra $30 billion per year of this surge, so that's at least 2 years, and then we will see. Here is what Secretary Clinton said on ABC This Week when asked about that.
But I think we have to look at the entire budget, and we have to be very clear about, you know, what the costs are. As Secretary Gates has said a couple of times in our testimony together, we are drawing down from Iraq. There will be savings over the next 2 to 3 years coming from there. And the addition of these troops is going to put a burden on us, no doubt about it. It is manageable, but we have to look at all of our fiscal situation and begin to address it.
So any thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, it's not just the $30 billion a year for the additional troops. It's the $68 or $69 billion for the troops we have there now. You're talking $100 billion a year.
Would you have us withdraw altogether and save all that money?
I would withdraw almost entirely, and I would exercise the right to send in special forces or to bomb specific Al-Qaeda base camps if we found any. Other than that, there is really no function and no utility for us to try to prop up an unpopular government. All we are succeeding in doing, I think, is recruiting more and more people. And the more troops we put in there, the more insurgents are going to arise in order to oppose us, because as far as they're concerned, this is not a country that has any sense of a country. It's the local valley, and they will oppose anybody who invades a local valley, whether from the United States or Britain or Russia or the next valley. And all we're doing is bringing up more people to fight our people and increase casualties. I don't see any possibility of anything useful coming out of a major troop commitment in Afghanistan at this point. As I said, we should attack not the Taliban, but Al-Qaeda when we find them.
Here is a call for Congressman Nadler from Shear in Mastic, I think I'm getting that right, who says he's a former governor in Afghanistan. Shear, hello.
Good morning, Brian. Nice talking to you, and I think it's a great program. We can exchange some good views in here.
Thank you. Tell me your background a little bit.
Well, I'm a former governor of Ghazni province, which is one of probably the area which has been really infested with Taliban, and I worked there last year and until June of last year, and then I came back to the United States after with some disagreement with President Karzai over the issues of fighting corruption, and as for, you know, as far as also many other issues as well was involved. But first of all, let me agree with Congressman Adler. I think even if we have more than 600,000 troops in Afghanistan, I don't think that's going to do any good. And let me give you some ideas as to why. I think, first of all, is the idea is good that we put additional troops in there. I'm not sure how helpful that be, given the terrain, given the situation in Afghanistan, how tough it is to fight. And I think the American also probably by now realize after 9 years of war as to how difficult that is to fight in that four region in the world.
Shia, let me ask you, why don't you think it's in Afghanistan's interest, the Afghan people's interest, to have American troops there? If you're trying to stave off the horrific rule, and I assume you would agree that it was horrific rule by the Taliban from before 2001, and if the Karzai government is so weak and corrupt, why wouldn't the Afghan people by and large want the Americans there to help them?
Well, there are a couple of factors. First, in 2001, majority, or I would say overwhelming majority of people did support American simply because they were sick and tired of living under the Taliban tyranny. So that was, and also when they came out after the Civil War, which President Burhanuddin Rabbani was in charge, and there was a lot of fighting, and there was a lot of, I think that my understanding is that there are more than 65,000 people died just during the short 5 years. So that Americans were definitely welcome. But the problem began really that when the Americans began chasing Taliban, they really did not eradicate them. They simply pushed them away and they crossed into the other side of the border. They did not pursue them. They did not talk to the Pakistani government at that time to make sure that they will not have a safe haven inside Pakistan. Now, when they left Afghanistan, suddenly we felt, the Afghan world, well, we were liberated, and the Americans say, all right, you know, everything's going to be all right now, and their country is all liberated, right, knowing that they did not, they simply pushed the problem to the other side. And after 2 years, in beginning 2004, Taliban basically got a chance to breathe, and then they began to recuperating, or they began to organizing. Back there.
Over there on the Pakistan
exactly
side. And Shia, I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you very much for your views and your input based on your experience. We appreciate it. And Josh in Woodside, you're on WNYC supporting the president's policy. Josh, thanks a lot for calling.
Yes, I have a question for the congressman, and it has to do with his likeness to Afghanistan to a Vietnam, and I just want to know if predicting failure is a safe policy to have. I mean, I understand there's some obvious likenesses to Vietnam, but at the same time, to think that the generals in the military haven't learned anything from Vietnam and that they can't operate differently, I just think that's generalizing. You're generalizing the war. And is there a danger to predicting failure? So assuredly, basically.
There's always a danger to predicting failure or success. Either way, obviously, one doesn't have a crystal ball. But you have to try to learn from the past. And one thing we know, as I said, is that the U.S. Army manual, they tell us that, and no one will deny, I don't think, that for a country the size of Afghanistan, if you want a counterinsurgency war, you need about 600,000 troops, which we're not going to do, which means we're not going to succeed. But the other thing is that, you know, it's very unfortunate that the Taliban are the nasty, terrible, horrible people that they are, and that they'd have a terrible regime. But for us to intervene in what now is a 35-year civil war between different elements in Afghanistan, after the Russians tried and didn't succeed, is frankly not only probably futile, but not our business. I mean, they have to settle their own civil war. There are a lot of very nasty regimes in a lot of different places. We don't try to replace them all. The question is there anything that is essential to American national interest to protect our safety there? And the answer is, aside from a couple hundred, or less than 100, we're told, Al-Qaeda, no.
Congressman Nather, we're going to be out of time in a couple of minutes. A few things very quick. You are obviously in good company on the Democratic side of the aisle in the House. That same Times article goes on to talk about how the president met with Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, before he gave his speech and failed to convince her of the rightness of this. Is there anything you can do from where you sit other than speak out? Would you dare vote against the funding for this, for example?
I most certainly will vote against the funding for this, and so will other people. I am afraid that the funding for it will pass with mostly Republican votes and some Democratic votes, but I hope not. The only lever we really have is to deny the funding, and we will attempt to do that.
And briefly, what are you hearing from the Senate on the health care negotiations, and would anything they come up with make you vote against a health reform compromise?
Well, I'm not hearing anything from the Senate other than what I'm reading in the newspapers, and I don't really know. Let me put it this way. I'm not going to telegraph how I'm going to vote because I'd have to look at the whole thing in detail. But anything with the Stupak Amendment in it that would greatly expand the denial of abortion services to women way beyond what it is now, the contrary propaganda to the contrary notwithstanding, a lack of a meaningful public option so that we're requiring people to buy health insurance and doing nothing to control the cost of health insurance, those would be very difficult to swallow.
Congressman Gerald Nadler from Manhattan and Brooklyn, thank you very much for coming on with your views today.
Thank you.
The debate goes on, even though the policy's been set. From our comments page, just a little sampling, and you can keep this conversation going. Tom writes, if we don't do a better job of cleaning up the mess of Afghanistan now, we'll regret it, no matter how regretful we are that we are there right now. Renee from Harlem writes, you don't need to compare Afghanistan to Vietnam. You can compare Afghanistan to Afghanistan. It brought down the Soviet Empire. It will bring us down, too. And another listener writes, President Obama very clearly articulated during the campaign that it was his intention to increase our presence in Afghanistan away from Iraq. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, more on the president, how he's doing for New York City. Our Andrea Bernstein is looking closely at his urban policy. Stay with us.